Hey Tiger, this podcast contains language and explicit themes. Welcome back to This Body, a podcast about being in a body. It's me, Sophia. Welcome in any newcomers. It's December, OMG, and what a strange month it's been so far. The Assad regime in Syria finally fell the other day. A rebel group took over and Assad ran off to Russia like a bitch. Keep running. It's all in flux and it remains to be seen what the new vibe of Syria will be, but so far, the rebel group HTS seems aligned with what the people want. Time will tell. As things stand now, they're saying women can wear what they want, so that's good. We shall see what happens, but right now it's just really good that people are being released from these psycho prisons and concentration camps, and families and friends are being reunited after a long-ass trauma. God, can you even imagine? I really can't. I really, really cannot imagine. So that's good news for Syria and for us too. Closer to home, a rebel with a cause walked up to the CEO of United Healthcare on a New York City street and popped him, killed him in the street. I mean, this is how it is these days. It's Mr. Robot. It's the dystopian future. We're here. Health insurance in America is criminal. For me, at least, it's hard to care that this man is dead. I feel bad for anyone who had to watch it happen and empathy for his family, I guess, or the ones who had no influence on his choice to withhold care to millions. But here we are. It's not unexpected. Americans have guns and the average household pays $25,000 a year for healthcare, which is $25,000 too much. Very strange days. In New Zealand and Australia, my other countries of residence, healthcare is covered by taxpayer dollars. My best friend had a baby a few years ago and the whole thing cost $35 for parking on the day that she gave birth, and that's it. You know, when you take a basic human right, something socially healthy people agree is not a luxury, like healthcare, and you turn it over to capitalism, to private insurance companies, and fucking ambulance chasers, society really gets sick. Really sick. Mentally, physically, spiritually. America is realizing its full evil potential right now, and like it or not, I'm here for it. Here comes 2025. December marks 1 year since I started this podcast. Yes, it's been 1 year of my musings, complaints, conclusions, and muckraking. If you're a long-time listener, thank you so much for joining me on the crazy train. And if you're brand new, welcome aboard. If nothing else, my ability to produce this body should assure you that if a perimenopausal pothead with chronic fatigue, undiagnosed ADHD, an untreated severe love addiction, and complex PTSD can do something brand new from scratch, you can definitely achieve whatever your New Year's resolutions are. 2025 is coming right up. Oh my Lord. I heard someone ask, what are you looking forward to in 2025 the other day? And I was like, what? Fuck if I know. What am I looking forward to next year? The mere thought of it induces fear and anxiety, but I guess if I had to put a positive spin on it, I'd say I'm looking forward to the full cancellation of Brad Pitt. A judge recently ruled that he had to cough up all these private texts and stuff for his never-ending divorce from Angelina. stuff he's not too keen on people seeing because he's not a good person, not a good father, not a good man. It's one of those things, though. Even though it seems like everyone should be fucking disgusted by his abusive BS, I fear that because Angelina is a woman and such a sex goddess, a certain audience will always side with the all-American Brad, who looks just so old Hollywood, such sun-kissed, facelifted Paul Newman archetype compared to the Angelinas of this world, the freakishly beautiful, the sexy, evil-looking babes. You saw it in the Johnny Amber trial. You saw a version of it in the last two elections. America fucking hates women. You know, I looked up the stats and New Zealand ranks 8th in the world for a good place for women to live, and America is 43. So, anyway, fingers crossed for Brad's downfall. Viva 2025. What else? Ocean aliens. Yes. Looking forward to finding out more about the ocean aliens and the aliens among us. Will it happen bit by bit or all at once? And if it happens all at once, what will that day be like? So much to look forward to. Oh, and there's going to be a new season of The White Lotus, so I'm super pumped for that. However, given how excited I am for it, that probably indicates that it will flop, like this year's Joker, Follet à Deux. Then again, I was excited for The Substance, and that delivered, so we shall see. Let's get into today's subject matter. For the past few weeks, I've been chipping away at the yamas and niyamas, the ethical practices of yoga. And we've made our way to brahmacharya. And it's here that I think the rubber really hits the road and a line is drawn between those who are seriously on a spiritual path, on the path of yoga, and are adhering to that path, and those of us who are interested in philosophical thought and metaphor, but who are not interested in devout practices as a means to reaching a destination that may or may not exist called enlightenment. I shall explain. Brahmacharya, in its essence, is the practice of celibacy or sexual restraint in order to preserve one's spiritual energy and focus on higher goals. It is the conscious decision to avoid indulgence in sexual activity, directing that energy instead towards personal growth, meditation, and a devotion to the divine. By controlling sexual impulses, one seeks to transcend temporary pleasures and cultivate inner purity, strength, and wisdom. This discipline is believed to enhance clarity of mind, deepen spiritual connection, and lead to greater self-mastery. Brahmacharya, therefore, is seen as a path to spiritual enlightenment and self-realization through the conservation of vital life force. But it's not just about sex, so if you're thinking, hell no, I'm not getting into this, don't worry, because in 2024, Brahmacharya, like everything else, exists on a spectrum. The yoga we practice in the West in modern times is an extremely diffuse variation of the true intention of the yogic path, which is a religious ascetic practice. It used to be a niche thing, but then yogis like Shivananda started to disseminate their own versions of yoga to the wider world, trying to make it accessible to all people because a bit of something good is better than nothing. And from there, we get to hear me in December 2024, a white New Zealander living in LA, teaching yoga and interpreting the basics in a way that makes sense for our modern life. With this series on yoga ethics for modern living, I'm hoping to make yogic thought relevant to life as we experience it today. But to even speak of sexual restraint these days makes me feel kind of silly, due to the overt and bonkers sexual culture we exist in now. Babes, if you like this podcast, come join me over on Patreon. You'll get early access to episodes, bonus episodes, access to the back catalogue, and just more of moi en général. I share my musical journey, curating mixes for our imaginary desert island jukebox, so pop on over to patreon.com/thisbodypodcast. That's patreon.com/thisbodypodcast and join up for only $4 a month. You'll love it. Any kind of restraint or observance related to sex seems not to align with the dominant norms and values of our society. So to delve into this feels a little bit inhibiting. To say what I want to say, there's a risk of social disapproval. So I'll pause for a moment and take us back to a couple of the former yamas and their tenets that helped support the seeker on the road of brahmacharya. When we start on a spiritual path, there is a period of shifting from things that everyone generally partakes in modern society, like drinking and talking shit and mindless consumption and whatnot. There is a transition from that to alignment with core values and spiritual practices that brings with it the need to pull away from the dominant culture. If the dominant culture made us happy, we wouldn't feel the pull to a spiritual life at all. But the need to belong is very strong and also part of our hierarchy of needs. In order to self-actualize to our highest potential, we need to feel belonging. So, brahmacharya is where things get real. Sex. Yes, it's challenging to live a non-violent life. It's challenging to be truthful and not to steal. But sex is on another level and comes with a lot of baggage and nuance. The sexual landscape we exist in today started its ascent to social dominance in 2012 with Instagram going public. Internet porn, social media, the rise of the ego-driven absorption of our times, the phone in our hand all the time, erectile dysfunction in young men, the removal of all boundaries, OnlyFans for your mum to make extra money on, you know, it's not fashionable to want to treat sex as a spiritual activity. It's not cool to recognize the power of sexual energy, which is so powerful that it can create an actual whole other person to be born. It's so creative. And not feeling supported to think of sex in terms of our spirituality, many, many people are just depressed and repressed about it. It's all very Tower of Babel nowadays. That's how I feel anyway. And I'm no prude. I've always respected myself in the sexual experience, at least, always wanted it to be the best it could possibly be. I've been willing to try many different kinds of sexual restraints, from handcuffs to celibacy. I'm looking for the highest expression of my sexuality, and this is how brahmacharya is relevant to my life. I read up on some statistics. I did my research, mama. And did you know that about 30% of men under 30 now have erectile dysfunction? Because of excessive porn consumption? Porn's always been around, but like heroin became fentanyl, porn has become internet porn, and now dicks and balls are dying everywhere. When I was a younger woman, I encountered the complete opposite in my generation. Guys couldn't keep it down. We were healthy-ish. So obviously now the boys are not in good shape, not in good working order at all. But luckily, there's a solution. Old school literal brahmacharya refers to the practice of restraint and conscious control over sexual energy, including the act of ejaculation. In traditional teachings, it's believed that ejaculation is the release of vital life force, and that by conserving this energy, you can elevate your spiritual practice, mental clarity, and physical vitality. It's the same thing as jing or qi in Chinese traditional medicine and thought. The idea is that you have a certain amount of this life force, and once it's used, like in the movie The Substance. Once all of our jing or qi has been drained, it's game over. And that's just the way it goes. But a mindful, intelligent use of our life force is better than the opposite. It makes our lives way better. And who doesn't want a good life? I do. I think we all deserve that. Babes, if you enjoy this podcast, be sure to rate, share, and subscribe. You can listen on Apple, Spotify, and Amazon Music. And you can find me at Sophia Forever. The pod's on IG too. Thanks, Tiger. But it's not all about sex. To bone or not to bone. That's not the only question. I mean, the Yoga Sutras describe techniques for having sex without ejaculation, like drawing the orgasm inwards, which can result in a full body orgasm with no physical emission. But beyond sex, there are all these levels and different applications of brahmacharya. For our purposes, let's not pretend we're living in an ashram and moving along the yogic path to enlightenment. For us, brahmacharya might be about cultivating a mindful relationship with our sexuality, ensuring that our sexual energy is directed in a way that serves us rather than being indulged in mindlessly or excessively. Brahmacharya is not about rejecting or denying sexual desires, but about being conscious of how and when and why those desires are expressed. So it could mean engaging in sexual activity only when it aligns with your emotional and your spiritual well-being. Yeah, rather than out of a compulsion or a pressure. A fleeting pleasure in the moment that may leave you shattered later on. It encourages mindful, intentional choices in relationships where sex is seen as an expression of love and connection rather than mere physical release. Sex and love together. What a revolutionary concept. So in essence, brahmacharya for modern living encourages us to take control of our sexuality and not be driven by external forces. In a modern context, brahmacharya could also mean setting healthy boundaries in relationships and choosing partners with whom you can share mutual respect and ensure that sexual experiences are good for you, good for your values, good for your personal integrity. It could be reclaiming agency over your sexual energy. Yeah, toward a life of greater fulfillment and peace and connection. Ah, that sounds nice. I want to do that. There's a discord between desires and our lived experiences. We want the world to satisfy us. Corporations know this and thus use our hunger and lust to make us crazy, becoming more and more excessive in our use and purchases of their products. Brahmacharya is not only about sex, it's also about non-excess in all areas. It extends into philosophical thought and practical applications in the area of comfort. So, our culture is really into comfort and ease. And there's facets to comfort and to what extent being comfortable is important for living well. What even is comfort? And when does comfort become a hindrance to our growth and strength? Well, we can take some notes from two dodgy old dead guys and their ideas. Abraham Maslow was born to poor Jewish immigrants from Russia. They lived in a multi-ethnic working-class neighborhood in Brooklyn, New York. And he became a psychologist and came up with a hierarchy of human needs that's taught in higher education settings today. And you've probably heard of it, Maslow's hierarchy of needs. His outlook was influenced by his family's very challenging financial circumstances, which I think is important to note because sometimes people have theories that are just based on metrics and not real life. But Maslow was living that life. He was about that life. So His hierarchy of needs are physiological, roof over your head, safety, you're safe, everyone around you is safe, a sense of belonging to your community, a sense of being esteemed by that community with affirmation. And then that will lead on to self-actualization. So the idea was that in order to ascend to the next level towards self-actualization, you need to have at least partially serviced the needs below it. Now, it's kind of based on an ideal. As a foundation, we'd kind of need to live in a tightly knit society where mutual aid is the norm and in being in deep community with nature. But this is an old way of life, a tribal way of life, doesn't exist anywhere anymore. We have some approximations of it. But the last tribes on Earth are struggling to maintain their way of life, and there's like hardly any space on the planet not just drenched in capitalist detritus. So we just got to start where we are and do our best to meet the needs on that list. And it's not going to be one size fits all, same as celibacy or sexual mindfulness. For some of us, having a high volume of sexual interactions may come to us in stride. For others, too high a number of sexual partners can shatter their nervous system. We are a highly variable species, hence the spectrums we apply to everything nowadays. There's no one size fits all. There's your perfect fit. And within you, a soul compass you can use to pinpoint that sweet spot. Your personal balance point. So we don't get to live in healthy small tribes, unfortunately. We don't have any nice little villages anymore, not without threat of big government and all the industrial complexes bearing down upon our peace.
Does anybody remember laughter?
But there are still some super wholesome things that we can indulge in all day long and not get messed up spiritually from. Nature, animals, the real world of which we are part, Earth. I think the happiest I've ever been was this period in my early 30s where the ocean was very central to my life. I used to surf a lot, very, very badly, like I'm the world's most pathetic surfer, but nothing in this world made me happier than melding totally with the will of the ocean. It was also the time when I was my most slim and fit and good looking all around. And the nicest thing about it was that I did not care one little bit about how I looked. One day in the not too distant future, I will find my way back to a coastal life. It's just really expensive, you guys. Have you noticed how fucking impossible it is to live near the beach if you're not a multimillionaire? But I have faith. I'm going to get back to the beach because that's what feeds my spirit, my body, my heart, my soul. And when that sweet, sweet day comes, I expect to see a dramatic drop in my Amazon purchases. Here's to the future. We might perceive that the convenience culture of buying stuff online and having it delivered very fast is comfort. Well, it's comfort in that delivery is good when you're sick. You're also supporting a gig economy, kind of. And it's just kind of comforting to not have to get off the couch and let mommy deliver it. But when is discomfort more important? Let's check in with that other problematic old culture vulture, the Buddha. Buddha was born rich and privileged. When he decided to abandon his wife and kids and go on a spiritual journey, he began by cosplaying as poor. A cultural tourist, if you will, a little bit like Drake. He renounced all worldly possessions, as you do, and went around begging and being a pauper, but then he quickly realized that sucked ass and decided it's better to be somewhere in the middle class. This gave birth to his wider idea of what's famously known as the middle way in Buddhism. To have a good life, we need warmth, shelter, to not be in chronic pain, to be fed, for our bills to be paid. We need to be safe from physical danger. We need our loved ones to be safe from physical danger. To have a good life, we don't need to buy bulk items. We don't need to have a hoarding pantry. We don't need every size and every color. We don't need to fuck every single hot person who we meet. We don't need to let our desires run us. I mean, there might be errors in one's life where hooking up with hot people for no other reason than they appear before us is just part of life's great adventure. But I mean, after a while, it starts to look pretty corny. Like Mick Jagger. He seemed a lot more normal when he was married to Jerry Hall. That seemed like the right end to a life of honking on the mic and notorious womanizing. But no, he couldn't just stay married to a supermodel. He had to be fucking gross and knock up another woman and all that jazz. It's cringe. Also, Al Pacino and Robert De Niro just became fathers in their 80s. Blah! I don't know how selfish men can get, but those two set the bar for this year anyway. Ooh, stop ejaculating and practice some goddamn brahmacharya. But yeah, these ascetic traditions, begging for food, only having one or two sets of clothes, enduring intense discomfort, doing crazy meditations where you look at dead bodies and stuff, that's a choice. In our material world, there's nothing inherently evil about money and having material comforts. In the tarot deck, for example, Pentacles is a suit concerned with material well-being. And that is just a fact and a facet of life. To get a tarot reading with lots of prosperity and opportunity in the realm of pentacles is a really positive thing. An unexamined lust for money is the root of all evil, not the thing itself. Now we can go over to the ancient Greek tradition of Stoicism. I think there's a lot of familiarity with Stoicism in New Zealand and the colonies. My grandfather was very Stoic. Everybody in my family handled pain just through the power of the mind to varying degrees of success. For the Stoic, the goal is tranquility, non-disturbance of the self, not to be sought in external things. You train yourself to be undisturbed by external circumstances. So Stoics feel that comfort is not important for a good life. I personally disagree. Growing up with that Stoic family value, as soon as I realized there was modern medicine in the form of ibuprofen and paracetamol, the idea of enduring pain and losing the day just seemed not very intelligent. To my mind, there's a balance to be had. Sometimes I think taking a sliver of Xanax is a healthier option than allowing the high levels of cortisol from attacks of anxiety to flood the body. You know, it's a risk-reward assessment. There's no truly solid pillars in life, just shifting sands. Ideologically, the Stoics and also the Cynics believed that being too cozy formed habits. Habits are a form of enslavement, therefore it represents a loss of freedom. So the vibe back then was to avoid temptation in order to be free, like my grandfather. It's a compelling idea. Like I often play that game of five things I'd take with me to a desert island, and they're things like weed and Valium and ibuprofen, and that bothers me. But we're living in a body. We are not free. We're not going to be free whilst we reside inside of this gift of a human form. We have to get real with where we are in time and space and make the smartest choices to support us in our real circumstances. I do think that we need a baseline of material comfort, and thus we should be advocating for everyone to have that. The more people out of poverty and living comfortably, the nicer it is for everyone. And we should be bringing our brains to the party when figuring out our basic well-being versus unnecessary participation and overconsumption. Society fetishizes luxuries, and so we experience them as necessities, like the $18 vegan sushi at Erewhon I find irresistible. Well, the other day, I put that sushi back and I went up to grocery outlet bargain market because I'm trying to live within my means. So, it's December, a month of insane excess. It seems very fitting that Brahmacharya was where we landed this month because Christmas and the holidays are always a time of cognitive dissonance, where the spoken messages, it's about love and togetherness, but the real messaging is about how deep in credit card debt you can get this month to prove what a great brother, wife, sister, or son you are. Just keep the teaching of Brahmacharya, non-excess, in your back pocket. And join the Patreon. It's only $4 a month. Very demure. Go to patreon.com/thisbodypodcast. Gift someone a membership for Chrissy. Leave a 5-star rating and I'll see you soon. Next episode on the free feed will be on the yama of non-possessiveness, a parigraha. Over on Patreon, I'll be recapping the HBO Max series on yoga charlatan Guru Jagat, Breath of Fire. So come on over and join me. Bye, babe.